blew me off for a bottle of tequila. Tequila's no good for you. Doesn't call, doesn't write. It's not nearly as much fun to wake up to.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Scalpels and Tequila, a Grey's Anatomy recap podcast. I'm Ayla.
And I'm Tamsin. And this is season 3, episode 24, testing 1, 2, 3.
And I just looked up this song. It's by the Bare Naked Ladies. You all know the song, 1 Week. And the video clip for this is really cute. And it's kind of a bit of a funky, cute little song. I just sent it to Tamsin. But the whole video clip is stop motion made on a chalkboard.
Oh, love that. That's very sweet.
Super cute.
So today in Grey's Anatomy land, everyone is being tested, not only in their personal lives, but in their professional careers.
Are they ever not being tested this lot? Jesus.
So true. Can you imagine trying to do an exam with this much importance and like your stepmom has just died, your wedding is tomorrow, you've slept with your best friend out of, wait, hang on, you've slept
you hate
with
your wife. Your,
yeah. You've had an affair.
I've got questions. Someone even, I think it was Burke or Derek, one of them says this episode, it's been a big year for you. Understatement of the century. We're still in our first year. All of this fucking schmozzle has happened.
It's pretty wild that like Burke and Christina are getting married and they haven't even been together for a year.
What is crazier to me than that is the fact that Karina.
And they've planned a wedding.
Yeah, Christina would have agreed. Who thought it was a good idea to have the wedding the day after these exams?
Well, definitely not Christina.
It makes no sense to me. I get it for the drama, but no.
Well, she didn't get to plan this, remember? None of her ideas got taken into consideration. Oh. Nothing that she wanted got listened to. I'm sure she was like, no to this day. And Burke and Mama and her mama just walked right over that, just like they did with everything else.
Oh, you're really not selling it to me.
So the monologue we open up goes like this. A surgeon's education never ends. Every patient, every symptom, every operation is a test, a chance for us to demonstrate how much we know and how much more we have to learn. So the monologue is short because there is no exit monologue, which usually means that this is a big cliffhanger episode, and it bloody well was. Cliffhangers left, right, and center. I've gone very off. I don't know why.
I think it's because we were talking about it for the last recording. This day just seems unnecessarily stressful.
Doesn't it?
We open up on our interns quizzing and
they are using Callie's magical cards, her famous quizzing test cards.
Because George has Callie and Callie's just so excited that George got the letter and he got a spot at Mercy West and she's doing her happy Callie dance and she's big and she smiles and she's like, this is going to be so great. I get to come home and ask you how your day was and not already know the answer.
You got into Mercy West. You got into Mercy West. Knowing that George has this place at Mercy West has given Callie such a huge confidence boost this whole episode because she is fucking crushing it. Everything she does today is like she's just killing it. There's even a moment where all of the attendings are fighting over who gets Callie in their surgery today.
But then we have George looking at her in this moment where she's dancing around so excited for him. It's a better program. There's a smaller pool. And all he can do is really look at her in disgust like, oh, why are you dancing around like that? Like he's really not into it.
I think
why are you yucking her yum?
Totally. But, I mean, he's not doing this for the right reasons.
Mm-mm.
That's why.
Yeah. The other sad sack today is Meredith. She's made the decision to not speak to the chief and plead extenuating circumstances. She is committed to going to Susan's funeral today and then doing her exam and then going back to work.
Because that doesn't sound stressful at all. That sounds fine.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. I think you're going to have a very, very good day. And for some reason, she's at the hospital. Like, was she doing the exam first and then going to the... I don't know. Either way, maybe just all of you don't be at the hospital today until you need to be for your exams, totally. Which is exactly what Weber and Bailey say.
They can't help it.
You are not to call on any of these interns. They cannot help it. They are here. You need to pretend like they don't exist.
They just can't get away. They're all standing in like a corridor watching into the ER behind this glass wall, and they are watching these patients get ferried through quite quickly because we have some intense patients today.
I just realized why you saying cliffhangers was so funny.
I didn't even get that I was being that
because
clever.
These men were found hanging on the edge of a cliff. So we have our lost climbers that get wheeled in. And that's why all of our attendings are brought together and told, you're going to have to do this on your own. Suck it up, princess. And Mark is such a sulky little bitch about it. You can't disrespect the interns that much for being idiots and then get really sad when they're not there to help
you. Totally. Come on, Mark. It's pretty wild because you'd really, all of the attendings are on this case. You've got Burke, yep. Chief, and Derek all waiting to accept this paramedic, like, incoming.
Delivery. And the first patient who comes in is Dale. So I didn't get all their names, but the first patient who comes in is Dale. And they're mountain climbers who were lost and they were found, whatever.
But they're frostbitten and it's horrific.
Ugh. They make so many silly jokes about each patient. So they come in and we need to get, this is the first time we see this paramedic come in, and she's great. She stays with the show for years and years and years.
She does, yeah.
And she lifts up the blanket, shows his hands, and says, those aren't gloves. No shit, Shirley. Have I told you the story about my friend who went viral?
No.
So she'd been living in Canada for 5 years, and Emma, my lovely Emma, was really into climbing buildings when she was drunk. So once in Tasmania, cherry picking on a 40-degree day, decided to climb to the top of the hot tin roof and got blisters all over her feet.
Oh, my God, that's not good.
No, but this story is better. She'd been living in Canada for 5 years. And anyway, got very, very drunk, ran away from her friends, which she does. It's fucking annoying. Mm. And decided that she was going to climb a church. Now, this church was too hard to climb, and she was too tired and too drunk. So she found a nice little patch of snow and curled up. And went sleepy bites.
What?
She was found by the parishioners the next morning.
Oh, my God.
Curled up. And there's this amazing photo of her online of her holding up her giant, swollen, frostbitten pinkies. But the funniest part is that the news article says, a drunk Australian tourist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, so her fingers blew up like this.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
I'll send you a photo. This is such a nightmare.
If you Google drunk Australian in Canada frostbite, she will pop up.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
What a legacy.
Yeah, best. But our second patient, I think I got his name, is Mr. Nelson. He's come in with what Christina was very excited about being called a flail chest. And that shit looks painful. I will mention that none of them have noses anymore. The third one, I didn't get his name, but he, I'm sure, has an injury. We just didn't get specifics on his injuries today. And there was a fourth climber.
I've got Jack Vaughan, Andy Meltzer, and Dale Winnick.
I'm going to go Nelson is Andy. Okay, cool. Anywho.
Andy has flail chest.
Who in a while. Nailed it.
Nailed it.
Oh, my. But our attendings, so we don't actually see, these guys look like they're going to be big, interesting patients this week, but we don't really get much from any of them. Basically, our attendings ask them what happened, and they're all very sheepish. And I can't specifically remember, but I was really hoping that this is where the cannibalism started. Anyone who listens to my other favorite podcast will know where that joke came from. Evan, enjoy that if you listen to this. But they're all really hush, hush.
Yeah, totally. So there, something happened out on that mountain. We know that there is a fourth climber.
Mm-hmm. We know that Dale blames himself.
They're not really talking about it, but we do get this moment of Izzy and George. They are about to go and talk to one of these patients, and the curtains are closed, and they overhear the climbers saying, "We left him out there. I can't believe we did that. Like, we shouldn't have left him. He's our friend. He was our friend. You don't leave one behind."
Yeah, you don't leave him out of them. Because basically they kind of say that they were climbing up the rough side of the mountain, and then suddenly they were all falling, and that climber number four was dead.
And they were all tied together as they were climbing. They're all connected.
Which, that's how it does.
Yeah, when you're climbing, I think you are all with the rock climbing. Oh, everything about this is so terrifying to me. This is like my worst fear. I would hate to be a climber. Oh, it makes me feel so uncomfortable and scared. I don't like it.
You've seen Ice Age, right? Yeah, so you know there's that moment right at the very start where the little squirrel guy puts his nut into the wall and it causes the whole thing to crack open. That is my fear, that you're going to hit it with that little hammer to put your little spoky thing in.
1,000%.
And you're just going to ruin a mountain. Speaking of crushing dreams, Alex spends a lot of today hanging out with Ava. She makes a really offhand comment about her kid's nose being her father's nose.
Yeah, Alex is very like, excited. That's a memory. That's how memory works. You clearly remember something. Let's dive into this. And Ava's being very cagey. And then she kind of starts saying like, oh, she doesn't know where that came from. That wasn't a memory. She just said it. It just popped out of her mouth. It was nothing. And this is a weird situation for Alex to be in because he wants to explore this more. He even goes to Derek and says like, hey,
Derek,
could her memory be coming back? Like, can we monitor this? Can we test this? And Alex is really excited that Ava's being a bit weird.
Mm-hmm. Well, then he gets really angry because there's a police force looking for her. You know, there's all these other people that maybe have concerns that she's keeping on and she's just not telling him. And he does threaten to call the police and she's like, what are you going to do? It's your word against mine. And you don't even know my name. I will say this is a very convoluted episode. This is one of those classic, like you said, big cliffhanger, big wrap-up episodes where everyone's got their toes dipped in something else. So it is a little bit hard to talk about.
Structurally, it's like we've got all of them have the big intern test and they all have another thing that's testing them. And all of that is kind of played out. So we have a lot of storylines today. So Alex's thing that is testing him is Ava, because he has been on her side since day dot. He found her. He has been her champion, her encourager, her cheerleader. He has been there. And all of a sudden, he feels like she's not telling him everything. He's giving everything to this case, to helping her, and she's hiding stuff from him. And yeah, he gets angry because he realizes that, you know what? If you weren't shocked, if you're not excited that you remembered that this one thing about your dad, then what that must mean is that you've had memories before. You remember, and you're not telling me after everything that we've been through. You're not telling me. And he gets really angry. Ava comes around and does end up saying like, hey, yeah, I do remember. And she starts telling him her story.
And she's sort of ashamed at how little of a story there is. She says there's nothing to tell. I was a pregnant woman in a lousy marriage with the nicest guy you've ever met. So she's obviously feeling a lot of guilt. She goes on to tell us that they met in college. They married a year after they graduated. She wanted to live in the city. he wanted to take over his father's business, and they end up living in a cabin in the woods. And he was a woodworker, and he was content with the quiet life. She didn't want that. She left him to go and see the sights. And she came to Seattle to go on an adventure. But all of this sort of falls to the crux of the fact that Alex is pushing her to contact her husband. And she's like, why would I do that? I left him and he's never come to look for me.
So I think a lot of Alex's anger also stems from this idea that she just walked out while she was pregnant on her partner. And it sounds like not because he was a bad guy, just because she was a bit bored. And that miscommunication, that walking out of a family, is something that hits Alex so hard because we know that his dad walked out on him. His dad left him to look after his siblings, to look after his mother, and his dad was never there. And I think this idea that this woman who he's been trying to help, who he's been really trying to piece the family back together, she walked out on her own accord, didn't tell anyone, and just disappeared from her life. And Alex is...
I think he's always seen Ava as the Madonna, though, as this perfect woman who could do no harm. And now finding out that she's human?
I don't think it's just that she's human. I think that it's she left. She didn't say goodbye. She walked out on her partner without communication.
Yeah. She left for selfish reasons, which is not dissimilar from what his father did.
Totally. And look, everyone's allowed to leave a relationship. That's so fine. But it's the she was pregnant and she did it without telling anyone, and they have all these people trying to look for her and piece her story together and help her. And it's I think he feels betrayed.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely.
So he's mad. And then Ava gets a little bit feisty as well, a little bit defensive. And she says, like, you don't even know me. You don't even know my real name. And they're having a really tricky situation at the moment. And it's really cutting Alex, cutting him deep. He really cared. He was really vulnerable and open with her and shared stuff with her and let her see a side of him that he doesn't let very many people see. And all of a sudden it feels like she was lying to him for a while. And I think it's just really hard for him to take. So someone else getting tested today.
I couldn't come up with a fun segue.
That's okay. You don't have to all the time. Someone else getting tested today is George. So this is George. George has gotten into Mercy West, as we did mention before, and Kelly knows and Izzy knows, but he is really struggling to tell Bailey, to tell Weber, and to kind of commit to this decision.
Well, apparently he didn't need to. Well, he didn't want to commit to telling anyone yet because him getting the position actually rides on his results of the test today. So he's got a letter of offer. How Bailey finds out, how the chief finds out, I don't know. There's some little birdie talking over at Mercy West. But I'm going to say fair. It's his business if he wants to go, and he doesn't know that he officially has the position until he gets the results back from this test.
Yeah, totally. But, you know, Bailey is so personally connected to George. Bailey has named her kid after George. George is Bailey's favorite. That's the unspoken but kind of spoken facts. So she takes it personally that they've put all of this time and effort and training into these interns, and she's just sad. She doesn't want him to go. She's taking it pretty personally. And George is...
keeps his composure pretty well, actually.
He does, yeah. I think it's mainly because he knows the reason that he's going has nothing to do with his career. The reason he's going is purely personal.
Yeah, but look, I don't disvalue him making the choice to leave any less because it's personal, because your personal life can pretty seriously impact your professional life. And if you want to do well professionally, especially in this kind of field, there needs to be a bit of separation between church and state. It's the one thing Grey's Anatomy teaches us more than anything else. Don't fuck your co-workers.
So we do have a scene with George and Izzy. This is a pretty intense moment where George explains to Izzy that he has to go. And Izzy says, "You can't. You're the glue. Like, you're the glue, George. You hold us all together."
And which, I mean, I think that's probably the most respect that George has ever been given by any of his friends to date. But
yeah,
this conversation looks really intense, and it does look like Izzy's begging him, especially from a distance, that distance being the staircase to which Callie is watching them.
George also says, "I can't handle seeing your face every day. Can't be kissing you in elevators. I'm married." And Izzy kind of swallows all of her feelings and says, like, "It was a one-time thing. Doesn't mean anything. That's how we have to look at it now. Stay and we'll move past it. And we just slept together once and it was a mistake and that's it." And then we have this beautiful moment of Izzy feeling her feelings alone and she has a cry. That's really sweet and hard and sad and heartbreaking.
The one person who really needs to feel their feelings today is Meredith. And she's not. She spends the morning blowing everyone off in a black dress, just breezing through the hospital and not really participating in the quizzing. She's just there to get things done and she's pushing everything down and aside until this funeral's done with. Until she's in the lobby of the hospital, telling Christina and everyone that she's fine and she can do this today, as Thatcher comes stumbling out of the elevator, wasted, with his daughter in tow. Molly is there. And I don't know why the security has let someone in this drunk and why Molly's let it get this far.
Molly comes in a bit later. Thatcher goes in first. Finds Meredith. And, you know, again, we have the chief looking on.
Doing nothing.
Not doing anything.
As he is screaming in Meredith's face that she is to blame. Mm-hmm. That Susan trusted her and she killed Susan.
And she's not wanted today. You are not wanted. And again, these moments with Meredith's dad are so hard to talk about. They're done so well. Like, the actor who plays Thatcher is really good. He's really good at this, playing this completely broken man who gets terrifying, and the words that come out of his mouth are so hurtful and so broken is like the only way I can describe it.
They appear to be so genuine as well, which is just the scariest part. Like, you know that he's been preparing this sentiment, and maybe that's not exactly the way that it was supposed to come out, but he said everything that he meant.
Molly does come and get him and doesn't really look at Meredith in the eyes, doesn't really apologize, doesn't really try and make anything better. And I understand it's the day of her mom's funeral, but I feel like, wouldn't you be like, I would apologize. I would feel like that. She did witness the end of that. And she doesn't kind of do anything about it. She's just like, "Come on, Dad, Lexi's in the car. Like, come on, let's go." There's no like, "I'm so sorry, Meredith." There's no acknowledgement of what her dad just did.
I think Molly's head must have been spinning a little bit because if you remember when Molly was in the hospital being pregnant, Meredith was her doctor, but she didn't know
Oh, my God. You're right. She didn't know that Meredith was Meredith.
No, that's what I mean. So she must have walked in off this elevator and been like, oh, shit. That's my sister. The woman that helped deliver my baby. That's my sister? That's what?
Oh, I wish they explored that more. I totally forgot that
her
she
brain must
know.
Have exploded into a thousand little pieces, suddenly realizing that, oh I have God. Met my sister. It's
that's
this
a whole
woman.
Other my God.
Yeah, it just dawned on me now.
Oh, what the fuck? Okay.
So fucked up. Which I think leads really well into the fact that Meredith just turns into a zombie.
Yeah.
Her face, we get this insane close-up and you can see every little bit breaking down because a week ago she was building a rapport with her father that she'd never had in her life.
Mm.
And now it's gone. And there was a woman that she was starting to try and love but that she kept pushing away
mm-hmm.
that's now dead and they go into the exam and everyone's sort of working on their quiz and George looks over and realizes that Meredith hasn't picked up her pencil.
It's like Meredith has gone through so much loss in her life and even as a child has carried all of this idea of not being wanted, like her mum never acting like Meredith was enough or like Meredith was enough at all. And it's like, you know, a week or so ago, meeting Susan a couple of weeks ago, since her mum passed, all of a sudden there was this mother figure trying to let Meredith know that she was enough. So there was a mother figure willing to try and be as much of a mum as Meredith needed. And it was really hard for Meredith to take, but Meredith had slowly started breaking down a wall and was about to accept that. And then all of a sudden it's all ripped away from her and this idea of a father is completely gone again.
And you've got Weber trying to act like he's understanding, but a lot of what she's dealt with as a child is frankly Weber's fault. And
yeah.
She calls him out and even says, stop acting like my surrogate father. Just because you slept with my mother does not mean you're my father. And I understand her resentment towards Weber, especially considering everything that's happened today. Thatcher's anger is misplaced.
1,000%.
And, you know, the childhood that Meredith had, she probably wouldn't have had if Weber and her mother had discontinued their affair.
Or started an affair at all.
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah.
It's just sad. It's all sad. She doesn't write anything down in her exam. She's emotionally drained. Like there's nothing left.
So the only word I could use to describe her was a zombie.
Yeah.
Christina sees what's going on but doesn't really know how to deal with it because mm-mm. emotions isn't what they do. And she kind of lets Meredith walk away and she's sitting in the lobby as our interns are standing upstairs watching her, not knowing what to do.
There's a little moment where, like, similar to when Denny died and one by one the interns went and sat with Izzy on the bathroom floor,
mm-hmm.
we get a little brief moment of that of one by one we have the intern sitting with Meredith in the like waiting area where she's sitting on one of the chairs in the hospital. We first get George who comes and sits with her. And then we get Alex who comes and sits with her and doesn't say anything.
George says to her, when your parents die, you make a lot of bad decisions you have to deal with for a very long time. George is not subtle.
George is not subtle.
No. Alex sits down, says nothing. And Meredith's like, are you going to give me an inspirational speech too?
No.
I think the part of this that pisses me off the most is at the end of the episode. So Weber sets her up an exam and she gets to go and sit down and do it. She just needed some time and everyone knew she needed some time. I think this is completely acceptable. It's fair. It's not special treatment. It's just you made a shitty call. You couldn't do it, so we're doing it now.
Well, I think we can't rush through this too much because after he sets up this exam, this is when she says to him, like, stop trying to be my surrogate father. And she ends up breaking down in his arms and he hugs her as she is bawling her eyes out.
Mm.
And she needed to release all that emotion before she could do this exam.
Yeah.
She can't have that bottled up inside her. And he has created a safe space for her to feel her feelings. And I think it's really nice.
Oh, no. Yeah. I agree with that entirely. He's given her the space she needs. He's understood that she needed that space, which is why Derek's reaction to all of this makes me so angry. At the start of the day, you know, he can see she's having a bit of a time. They're in the lift. And he says, mm-hmm. if you need anything, I'm here for you. Doors close. Mm-hmm. But it's not till the very end of the episode that one of our interns offhandedly mentions what happened with Meredith. And you can tell that he's angry that she didn't come to him. It's like, Derek, take a step back. She wasn't thinking about anyone. Not specifically that she wasn't thinking about you.
Mm.
Your girl had a big old mental breakdown because her father, again, abused her in her place of work in one of the most emotionally devastating ways. This has nothing to do with you.
Totally.
You need to set your own feelings aside and, like, be waiting for her when she gets out of that room, or at least know her well enough that smothering is not the way that is going to help soothe her.
It's really sweet. All of the interns are sitting on the stairwell right outside of Meredith's little private exam room, and they are just waiting. The camaraderie with our five interns is just so beautiful. You know, you're like, oh, these friends, aren't they sweet? Yeah, I love watching them when they do sweet things for each other like this, as a group specifically. Mm-hmm. So the other tests we have going today, we have George is being very not subtle about his relationship with Kelly. And we have Christina, who's fucking getting married tomorrow.
I still say the planning of this day, the mamas don't know right. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, it's wild. It's
absolutely wild.
So today, after testing day, we have Burke is going to have a bachelor party and Christina's going to have a bachelorette party.
Oh yeah, because Burke's best man has had to tap out and he tried mm-hmm. to talk to Christina about it this morning. She's like, you have 5 seconds. It is test day. We do not talk about the wedding today.
Fair, which is like fair enough, thank honestly. You. Like, give her a few hours and then she can go into wedding mode. But look, if you wanted her full attention the day before the wedding, don't fucking plan the wedding after the test.
No.
Come on, Burke. Like, oh, what do you expect?
Mm-hmm. So Burke, Chief, and Derek are standing outside waiting for our climbers, ambulances to come in. And they start having a little bit of chit-chat. And Chief just automatically assumes that Burke is going to ask the Chief to be his best man. And he's not. It's Derek. He's going to ask Derek. And Derek is adequately surprised, as I feel like he should be.
Yeah. And then it falls to Derek to plan a bachelor party.
Why the fuck would you have a bachelor party the day before the wedding?
Joe's? I don't know. I don't know who's doing this.
Mm-mm.
It's like, Joe's tonight after work? Easy. What's weird to me is like
the fact that Joe is working tonight after the day he's had.
Yes. And also the fact that Burke is so planning McPlanison with this wedding that like there wasn't a bachelor party planned earlier. Like I know his best man fell through, but wouldn't the best man have just at least planned the party
like a week before?
Like ages ago?
I think this is an American thing. Shout out to us listeners. Is it common because everything I've seen in film and TV is that y'all have the bachelorette party like a couple of days before the wedding, and that seems like a terrible idea to me.
Who wants to get married hungover? That sounds horrible.
Yeah.
Don't you want to look nice and look, I don't know.
Well rested. Like everything we hear about weddings is like, it's a long day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I feel like if you were Burke's best man, like specifically Burke, if Burke is picking a best friend, that friend's going to be an organized person.
Oh, yeah, like an absolute Burke. Control freak.
So what has this best man done? This best man hasn't planned anything.
To be fair.
Drops out the day before.
This guy hasn't had much notice.
Weird.
We haven't.
No, he hasn't had that much notice. But, like, if you were Burke's best friend, he still would have said to you, like, look, at least a couple of weeks ago, hey, will you be my best man? And you've said yes. I feel like knowing the wedding was a couple of weeks away or a month away, you'd plan the party.
Well, actually.
And then even if you dropped out the day before and the party was that night, the party would still be organized.
In saying that, I don't think Burke's a party guy. I think Burke's a go out True. To a fancy dinner one-on-one with his best man and open a really nice bottle of red.
I also think Burke's maybe, a let's have the boys around and play poker kind of guy.
Oh, I think that might even be a stretch too far. I reckon if his best man took him out to see a string quartet.
Jazz club.
With some wine, that'd be Burke's vibe.
True.
Yeah. So either that or they just weren't going to have a bachelor party. Like Burke's idea of a bachelor party, I feel like would be drinking a nice glass of red and listening to a beautiful orchestral record.
Yeah. All right. Fair.
Fair.
Fair. Fair.
Fair. But they decide to go to Joe's, which I'm flabbergasted by because earlier today, Joe and Walter, come into the hospital to speak with Addison about a potential birth mother. And they just keep dropping bombs on her. Because it turns out that the birth mother is at the hospital today. And in Joe's words, we were wondering if you could kick the tires and look under the hood and make sure everything's all right.
It's funny to me that they're playing up this idea that Addison is being like stalked by pregnant people. I guess it actually comes up as a line, but as soon as they bring the pregnant lady in for Addison to assess all the like, you know, the like, this is Grace doing a comedy thing that like blinky blinky music comes in and it's like, oh no, like pregnant people are going to plague her day because she can't get pregnant. And you just want to be like, yeah, but that's her job. Like her job is to do it. Like, yeah,
it's exactly what Callie says.
Callie said it, but I still wrote it down because it was what I was thinking before Callie said it. But I'm.
Well, because while Joe they find twins. So Joe passes out, which is adorable. So while Joe and the birth mother are relaxing, Adele, who doesn't want to be known to be at the hospital, flags Addison down as she's walking through the ER. I'm sorry. There is literally another hospital on the other side of the city. We know this.
It's bizarre that Adele's like, oh, I don't want Richard to know anything, but I'll just go to his hospital and sneak around.
Fuck, Adele. It's exactly what she does. She says to Addison, I do not want him to know I'm here. It is none of his business. I'm a 52-year-old pregnant woman. And she calls it terrible and embarrassing, which also just, stabbing Addison in the heart again. But we do have a beautiful moment at the end of the episode where Adele must be leaving and she peeps Webber. Webber sees her and she ducks into the bathroom to hide. And he's so polite to not go into the bathroom.
She's so funny.
But I think it's so he's waiting out the front, banging on the door, being like, Adele, stop this. But if someone's literally run away and hid from you, I think that's your cue to leave.
Yeah, I mean, she makes it pretty obvious.
Yeah. But our day gets pretty dramatic because the boys invite Addison along to the bachelorette party at Joe's because he's working tonight. He's passed out. He's fine. And he's going back to work.
So what's funny is, like, with this episode, just because of how much is going on, like, we're already kind of talking about these wrap-ups, but they're not really short mm-hmm. wrap-ups like they normally are. They're actually, like, decent chunks of scenes in themselves.
Yeah, so all the boys are sitting around a table and in walks Addison and she says, "What am I, the stripper?" Yep. Am I the entertainment? Okay.
Bad joke, bad Addison. Joke. I actually think it's really nice that they invited her along. I think it's like this sign that she is respected by them. She is on their level. We've talked a lot about how there's not many. I mean, there's Callie as well, but Callie's kind of been, oh no, Callie is the level mm-hmm. below.
So's Bailey.
Yeah. Addison's the only.
Yeah. But then they do go on to say, you know, it's not like you guys have seen me naked, and Burke's just sitting there wide-eyed, hands on chins going, "I haven't." Mm-hmm. So she goes to get them all a round of drinks. Mm. And Walter comes barging in with our surrogate mother of twins. And she was complaining earlier about heartburn and then she collapses. And it's all very dramatic. And at the same time,
we missed a scene, but is that right?
Bailey and Callie are having a really interesting chat about Chief Resident, because as Tamsin was saying before, when it comes time to do surgery on our climbers, Derek's got one. Derek's got our third climber who has an injury to his spine. Burke's patient, Andy, has the flail chest, rib where yeah. his lungs have collapsed. Yep. And Dale is being seen by Mark Sloan with the mangled fingies. So they're all fighting for Callie and she ends up spending the day jumping in and out of each of these surgeries to complete them all at once.
Just proving how boss she is because she's fucking good at her job.
So the surgeries have all ended up and Callie and Bailey are having a chat and we suddenly realize that, fuck, these guys are the same age. They're the same part of their career. Bailey's surprised that Callie has a hat in the ring for Chief Resident.
Yeah.
And she has to casually remind Bailey, "I'm just as good a surgeon as you are."
She says, like, why wouldn't I be in the running?
Yeah, why wouldn't I be? I'm just as good of a surgeon. I'm just as organized. I have just as much to prove as you do. Everyone knows that you're the chief's favorite, which is a lot.
It's weird that Callie's this is where I get confused with the hospital system. Callie is still a step above Bailey, even though they're both residents.
Why?
Because Callie is chief of ortho.
No, she's not yet.
Bailey isn't she? Mm-mm. She's just an ortho
resident.
Why doesn't Callie have her own interns?
How come when we sit the exam, there's 30 other interns and we don't know who they are?
Because all of the residents get assigned interns, which is what we see. We see that when our five interns get assigned interns.
Yeah, we do. But then that kind of drifts off for everyone else.
Callie doesn't have interns.
Sydney doesn't have interns.
Oh, my God, it's so confusing. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yes, but yes, she has to kind of remind Bailey that, like, it's not just a competition between you and Sydney. Like, my hat's in the ring for this too. Fair enough. Quickly, while we're talking about Callie also has a chat with Addison today that I think is important to bring up.
It was so nice to see Addison having a friend again.
It's all every time that Callie and Addison get these moments together of friendship, it's so joyful and it's so needed. I hate just constantly seeing these two in
turmoil
amongst their own colleagues who are treating them so badly. Like, they need the respite in each other. They need the safe space with each other, and we don't get it enough. But it's such a relief to see these two together. So Addison is talking to Callie about how she feels like she's being plagued with pregnant ladies who are haunting her because she is barren and she can't have kids and she's having a really hard time.
But I think it's specifically people that she knows who are in her gravitas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, totally. And that's when she says, like, oh, Callie, like, not you too. Are you pregnant?
Oh, yeah, the side eyes from Callie. Amazing.
And Callie says, no, but I've been thinking about it. And then she can't count the way Callie is talking about why she's thinking about having a baby. It's one of those things where I just want to shake her and be like, baby, you cannot have a baby to fix a relationship. That's not what babies are for. Because the way she says it is like, I think it would, now that he's going to be at Mercy West, I think a baby would like help us. And it's like, that's, you can have, you can want a baby.
No,
that's
a
fine.
Lot of pressure to put on it, but on a human.
That's not the reason to have one.
Yeah, I flagged that as well.
And on a kid, yeah.
I don't think she realizes what she said, because the way that she put it genuinely does sound like, oh, we're going to have enough time to do one now. There's not going to be this extra pressure. We're going to have different rosters. It's going to work better. But it's also not. He's still an intern. You're vying for chief resident, which honestly, I don't understand why anyone wants it. It's extra work on top of what they're already doing. But yeah, well, all y'all ever do is complain about how hard this all is.
Yeah, exactly.
And you also watched the way that Bailey got treated after she had a baby. Not fucking well.
Oh, no. Horrific. So then, sorry, we are going to jump back again. Back to the bar where one of the pregnant women who has been haunting Addison has just collapsed.
Collapsed.
Mm-hmm. And Joe and his partner, Walter, are there and they are freaking out. And we kind of are left on a bit of a cliffhanger there with Addison screaming, like, someone call an ambulance.
And Derek just casually strolls up to the bar because Addison didn't get him a drink and he needs a drink.
So simultaneously to this bachelor party, we have Christina's bachelorette party going on at Meredith's house.
It is. It looks calm and casual. Until you realize that Callie is
drinking margies in the kitchen, having a chat.
Callie is trying to engrave the wood on the other side of the walls with that stare. Because they're all doing a little bit of a bitch about their partners, which is our favorite thing to do. Just make little jokes about men being silly men.
Christina's stressed because she doesn't know how to write her vows. And they're all like, how have you not written that yet? Come on. And she's like, I just don't think I want to say, what am I meant to say? Like, oh, I'm just going to love you and cherish you forever. And she's just kind of rolling her eyes at it, which rubs Izzy the wrong way. She says, like, if you couldn't be with the person that you loved, and then pretty much all you can think about is them saying that to you, that they will love you and cherish you and how much it would mean to you. You're all just jaded because you're all with your people. But the people like me who aren't with the people that we love, like, that's all we want. So stop bitching, basically. And it's a weird moment because
Callie is shooting daggers out of her eyeballs at Izzy. And Meredith clicks and sees this because Callie can't control her face anymore. Not Mm-mm. after what she's seen today, not after the lies she's found out. And Meredith says, I wish that they'd scripted it as, I know how much you miss Denny, or I'm so sorry this is making you miss Denny, rather than, you're talking about Denny, aren't you? Question mark.
I know, but I actually think the way they scripted it is more naturalistic for a person who is trying to fix something on their feet really quickly, like it's clunky. Because they are like, fuck, I have to fix this. You're thinking about Denny, right? It's like,
it's like you're trying awkward. So hard not to pull your friend out from in front of the bus, but yeah. You've run to push them out of the way of the bus and accidentally push them that little bit further towards the bus.
Are we really going to talk about buses and George in the same sentence? Anyway, so.
Because Izzy was again today being a bitch about Callie, asking if she was going to be at the Bachelorette drinks. Like, you had all day to compose yourself.
I really like that Christina is trying to become friends with Callie.
Callie's doing the bitch a favor on all the other favors that totally. They've done.
So then we kind of cross back to Joe's bar, where Derek has decided he needs to go get himself his own drink. And he's sitting down, about to order. And then cute old girl saunters up to the bar.
Saunters up. She doesn't even saunter. She just appears, elbow down, and says, can I buy you a drink?
In like a very cute, innocent little way.
Yeah. I just want to buy you a drink. Why is this?
She's like, I've had a bad day. I'm allowed to be forward today.
Oh, yeah, because he calls her forward. I've had a hard day. I deserve to be forward. And cue Tamsin squealing, messaging, just having all of the emotions about it because we have finally seen.
It's Lexi Day.
It's Lexi Day. I completely forgot that they introduced her to the cast the same way that we get introduced to Meredith.
Oh, I didn't. That's the whole storyline. Because Derek says, you're the girl from the bar. And Meredith's like, I'm the girl from the bar.
Well, that's enough spoilers. We are so excited to wrap up this season. Really long season, 25 episodes, but we can't wait.
How do you feel? What's just a little bit of Lexi chat? How do you feel about Lexi? Are you a Lexi fan?
I'm not a Lexi fan. You would ask me about my favorite Grey's characters. I kind of nothing Lexi.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm genuinely excited to get into the Lexi of it all because I know she's quite polarizing. Some people really, really love her, some people really, really hate her. I don't have a lot of strong memories of her either way. You've got the teach me moment.
Yep.
That I specifically remember. My other strongest memory of Lexi is when they realize that she has a photographic memory.
Yeah.
And they treat her like a computer and make her study till Lexi her brain turns into jelly. Those are my kind of biggest memories of Lexi. So I'm excited to get into Lexi.
Yeah, cool.
Like Mark is.
Thank you. So I remember strongly not liking Lexi for a little while. When we were first introduced, you know, that my first time watching it, I remember not really liking this character, being quite annoyed with her. But by the end of our time with Lexi, her being just loving her and thinking she was great, but also on my rewatches, I like Lexi more and more. And it's also one of those things because I remember when I did my first ever, when quizzes started coming up onto the internet and everyone was like, what Grey's Anatomy character are you? I missed
that part of the internet.
And I remember the very first Grey's Anatomy, what Grey's character are you? I got Lexi. And at the time, I wasn't a Lexi fan and I was kind of annoyed. And I was like, why? Like, I want to be Christina. I'm not a Christina. I just wish I was a Christina. But I still get Lexi to this day, but I have just grown to like her more and more. So I'm actually really excited to rewatch the start of Lexi, like the next season.
Like we've said a few times, the way that we watch the TV show for the podcast is a lot different to how we've casually watched it over the years. Like, I don't remember ever hating Derek as much as I do.
No. Yeah, no.
And how much little respect I have for his character. So I am really keen to get to know Lexi again. Like,
in this context, I think it's going to be really different.
Well, look at the way both of us have perceived Callie and Addison this watch around. Complete 360. heaps different. So yeah, I'm pretty excited to get into it.
So we are very excited to get the final episode of season three will be next week. How wild. It's going to be a huge one. So again, get your tissues ready. After we do season three, we are going to have a little bit of a break between season three and season four. Just we need to recalibrate some stuff, just make sure everything's going smoothly with the podcast. You know, there's things to do. Have a little break. But don't worry, we aren't breaking from season 19. That will still be on track.
So we look forward very much to seeing you all next week. Thanks so much. Bye-bye. Bye.
Vagina.
Sing it.
Vagina.
We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands where we record this podcast. And we pay our respects to the elders past, present, and emerging. And we acknowledge that sovereignty was never ceded. We talk a lot on this podcast about medical practices, and we would just like to say that we completely acknowledge that the medical practices of the First Nations people were created and used well, well, well before any of the Western medical practices that we mainly talk about on this show, in relation to this show. And the medical practices of our First Nations people are still being used successfully today.